Welcome to San Diego News Fix, The Backstory. I'm Luis Cruz. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court said it would take up a case from Poway Unified School District that tackles a contentious area of social media, specifically when and if public officials can block people from their Facebook, Twitter, or other social media accounts. The case concerns TJ Zane, a former Poway School District trustee, and current member Michelle O'Connor Radcliffe and their Facebook and Twitter pages. At issue, whether public officials with social media pages where they discuss public business can block individuals, or if doing so violates the First Amendment. Joining us now to discuss this case is Union Tribune criminal justice and legal affairs reporter Greg Moran, enterprise editor Christina Davis, editorial and opinion director Matthew T. Hall, managing editor Laura Sacallo, and we begin with publisher and editor Jeff Flight. Jeff?
Okay, thank you, Luis. Okay, Greg Moran, fascinating story. Maybe just take a couple of minutes here to lay out some of the contours of what's going on here in our case and in the Michigan case.
In this case, it involves two school board trustees from Poway Unified School District, TJ Zane and Michelle O'Connor Radcliffe. TJ Zane is no longer on the board. He stepped down in December. I think he was termed out. But and it deals specifically with their use of social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. They had both set up social media pages when they first ran for office in 2014 and 2016 as campaign pages. And then when they won and were on the board, these pages kind of morphed into their public-facing pages for school district news and what they were doing. And it included posts about their visits to various schools in the district, issues coming up in front of the board, and things like that. In 2017 or so, parents, a couple in the district, Kimberly and Christopher Garnier, began interacting with them on their social media pages, Facebook and Twitter, by posting a lot of comments. And the Garniers were particularly concerned with a couple of issues. There were a lot of misconduct allegations about the then superintendent in the district, and also some racial bias and racial issues in the district. The Garniers, you know, interacted very frequently with these pages. As the courts have pointed out, none of their postings or their comments were threatening or profane or vulgar or anything that you find in a lot of comment sections. But what they maybe lacked in vitriol, they made up in volume. They would post, I think there's one instance where a fellow, I think it was Christopher Garnier, replied 226 times in 10 minutes to a single tweet on one of the pages. The trustees saw this as a kind of spamming, and they took steps using the tools available, both Facebook and Twitter, to essentially block both of these individuals from their accounts. The Garniers then went to federal court in San Diego. They filed the civil rights lawsuit saying that blocking them in what they saw as these kind of public-facing official pages violated their First Amendment rights, both to speech, but also to petition the government. That's also part of the First Amendment. They've won both in the district court and then the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal last year in a case of what's it called, a case of first impression, the first time they'd ruled on this, upheld the lower court and said, if you are a public official and you operate a social media page in this era, and that page is connected, there is a nexus between that page and your public duties, then blocking people, prohibiting them from commenting or interacting with you, can be a constitutional violation. You know, you can't do that. It does infringe on their rights to speech and petitioning. That was one of about four or five rulings that appeals courts around the country have made on this. Most of them align with the Ninth Circuit. However, there was one court at around the same time ruled on a case out of Michigan. Port Huron, Michigan. The city manager there had a Facebook page where he also posted a lot of information about the city and city business. It also had a lot of personal stuff in there. There was a constituent there who would interact very aggressively and not profanely, but again, with volume. I think a lot of it had to deal with COVID, lockdown type issues. Mm-hmm. And it got blocked, sued in federal court. And the appeals court there came down differently than the Ninth Circuit. And they said, no, you know, this is a personal page of this guy. Yeah, he's talking about his job, but yeah, he's got pictures of, you know, sunsets or ponies or, you know, whatever. And so it is not an extension of his public role. Therefore, he can block him. So you have these two different holdings on this very contentious and growing issue of interactions on social media with public officials that have come down on opposite sides. When that happens, the Supreme Court often will step in, resolve the conflict or the split in the circuit, and begin to lay down some rules for everybody going forward. And I think that's where we are now.
Yeah, great summary. So Matthew Hall, I think your group opined on this very topic. Tell me your thoughts about political speech versus government speech. Like, I think, you know, in a lot of areas, there's a lot of care taken to try to draw that line between those two domains. And then, of course, here's the third one, would just be personal speech. Right. Yeah. So tell me how you're seeing this.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. People like to think of free speech as a bright line, but speech is complicated. Right. I mean, and it's not just as simple as you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. It's interesting. So just to cut right to it, we think that politicians carry the First Amendment with them to social media, that if it applies at a public meeting or at City Hall, that it should apply to their use of platforms that are used by hundreds of millions of Americans every day. And that seems clear to us. But I will note there are, Greg did a great laydown of these cases. These aren't the first cases to be argued in the court of opinion, a public opinion. They're only the ones that made it to the Supreme Court here. But a couple of years ago, the then Encinitas mayor, now state senator, Catherine Blakespear, ran afoul of some constituents who took legal action against her, claiming that she had blocked them. And she settled with them and issued an apology. She is not apologetic about it. They have said that she violated the terms of the agreement. And when we didn't endorse her in the primary and cited this case, she actually came in with a very nuanced answer and a very deep kind of dive into these issues. Catherine, interestingly enough, is a former journalist. She has a bachelor's and a master's in journalism, worked at the LA Times and the AP. So understands the interplay between politics and journalists. And she pointed out, look, you guys didn't let COVID denialists print what they wanted to say in letters or in essays. You drew lines that around speech that defined speech. You supported the county supervisors when they tried to limit what people could say at public meetings, when those meetings were getting very raw. And in some cases, people were saying racist things to county officials. And Catherine told us, look, I've been threatened. I have been threatened by people saying that they want to rape me. And there are certainly lines that you can draw. And we agree with all that. She actually helped me personally and the board look at it in a more holistic way, I think. Again, to my earlier point, that there is no bright line. But I do think there are lines that you can draw. And I do think that, you know, blocking people on social media as a politician is not something that we should encourage or accept. And I hope that the Supreme Court kind of starts to figure out where we can draw these lines. Because as I said, it's complicated in one sense, but really it's also pretty basic and fundamental in another, that the public has the right to interact with public officials.
Yeah, like, and maybe Laura Sacallo, I know you've got a lot of thoughts and insights about this. To me, yes, the public has an absolute right to access to public officials and their administration of the public, their public duties. But also, these people are politicians, and they've got all sorts of forums where they speak politically, where they select who they're speaking to, they charge you to come and talk to them. You can't just walk in to the big Joe Biden fundraiser up in Del Mar because you want to talk to them. They'd say like, no, this is a political event, sir. Sorry, you're not allowed in. So I'm not sure it's so, I guess I feel a little confused about the, or ambivalent about the whole thing. Laura, tell me how you're looking at this.
Well, I think part of the distinction that I would draw, and I think maybe the courts are drawing, is the nature of the platform. As Matt said, we do have control over what we decide to print or publish online. And if Matt's team, the opinion team, decided they were not going to print letters from COVID deniers that contained untruths, that's certainly within their right. I guess the distinction to me in this case is the platform, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, can decide to block people, but that's the platform owner. It's not the politician. It's not the public official making that determination. Just as a public official that we are quoting or writing a story about doesn't have the determination of who else we're quoting, who else can be in the story criticizing that public official or their opinions. That's the duty and the right of the platform owner. So to me, this isn't really an issue about the First Amendment rights of the public official to determine who can criticize. That's an issue that goes to the platform that they're using. And I guess I have a question for Greg and Matt as to where maybe the courts seem to be drawing that line about what is a public page. You know, in some cases, I think some of these public officials are arguing, no, this really is a private page. Yes, I identify myself based on my public role, but I'm not using it in furtherance of my public work. That seems like a very murky line. At what point does it cross into being a public page rather than their personal page?
Well, I think that's, you know, that's clearly one of the issues that the Supreme Court's going to have to resolve. There was some, some analysis there about the kind of the appearance and the purpose of the page. And that kind of gets into sort of looking and analyzing the content. And if it is, you know, if you're the police chief and you have a Facebook page, and you're putting up there, get pictures of your grandkids or, you know, sunsets or the kind of innocuous elements of your personal life. I mean, that's pretty clear that it's not. But there are, you know, kind of a legal matrix that you go through to determine whether or not somebody is behaving as a state actor or an agent of the state, or if they're doing something on their time. Now, those are standards that were developed for, you know, years ago in the pre-digital world. And one of the challenges, I think, in this case is, you know, it came up a couple of years ago in a different context. Then President Trump had blocked a number of people from his Twitter account. They sued. They won in the lower courts. The lower court said, no, it's a First Amendment issue. It got to the Supreme Court and was dismissed as moot because by that time, President Trump was no longer in office. He had been defeated. But in dismissing it, Justice Thomas, Clarence Thomas, had said something like, you know, maybe we're going to have to resolve this because it's clear that, you know, the old rules, the old doctrines, applying old doctrines to the new digital platforms is, you know, not a straightforward proposition anymore. And so we have to kind of figure out some new things. So whether or not that analysis of you're behaving as a state actor on your Facebook page, you know, is going to be picked up whole and just laid down in the digital world is kind of one of the things they're going to have to decide, I think.
Yeah, very interesting case. Yeah, that Trump case, I remember that. Like, Laura, your argument that, if I understand it properly, okay, so I, as a politician, if I block you, I am blocking everybody from seeing what you have to say, and I shouldn't have that power, which that's a good argument. Although, being able to block people is fundamental to the platforms. And whenever I block you, whether I'm a politician or not, I am blocking people from hearing what you have to say on my page. But you can go start your own page and say whatever you want, right?
Right. But I think two distinctions. One is, if you're a public official, you do not have the right to block criticism in every forum. If you're
Every forum or in any forum? Like, I need to open the doors to my rally to people who I don't want there?
No, but that is not considered the public square. If you're a city council member and it's an open city council meeting, you as an individual, providing there's not hate speech or threats, you are bound by the First Amendment to allow public criticism. However, if it's your private campaign rally, that's different. Just as if my understanding of these cases, if you have a personal Facebook page, even though you're a public official, you have every right to block people on your private page. It's the functioning of the publicness of your role. And if this is a page in which you are conducting public business, discussing public business, that's different than if it's your personal page in which you retain the right to block people. Right. I guess the distinction I'm making is, it is not the public official's right to determine the platform's role in blocking people. That's, you're behaving as a public official in that space.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it sounds a little bit like we're enshrining Facebook as the fifth estate, something that I really don't think is appropriate. But people could have, you know, all sorts of different perspectives on that, depending, I think, on your experience, your generation, your political philosophy. People have a lot of ideas about this. Christina Davis, what do you think about this whole dispute? You've covered courts for years and years, a lot of constitutional issues. What do you think about this?
I think it's an incredibly nuanced issue. I mean, I can see all sides of the arguments, and it's going to come down to, I think, so many different distinctions, you know, where we draw that line. So that's for smarter people than me to figure out. All I have to say is, I mean, this is such a timely issue, though, and I am so glad that the Supreme Court is going to be looking at this, just to kind of, like we said, you know, like, let's at least set some, know where we stand on this issue, because so many public officials and public agencies, even, we haven't really talked about agencies, just a personal people, but, you know, they're all going to all of these social media platforms. You didn't know how many times, just back when I was reporting, when I would reach out to a PIO, a public information officer at an agency, for some information about something, and they'll just point me to their Facebook page or their Twitter account and say, it's all on there. Go grab it. And it's almost like this reluctance to even just deal with me on a more personal basis. You know, well, actually, I'd like to interview you about it. I have more questions about it. So this is something that Greg and I, you know, talked about the other day as he was writing the story about how, you know, this is just going to become more and more relevant as more public officials and agencies, you know, they want to funnel the public and journalists to social media pages as their main line of communication. I mean, that we see it happening a little bit, and that could be even more of a trend, you know, as we go forward. And so I think it's just can be really concerning. If that's really the direction that we're going in. So what is that, you know, blocking people is incredibly concerning when you start thinking in those terms. And maybe Greg can expand on that, but just as journalists, that's like something that we have at the front of our mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Greg does have some thoughts on that, and I'll let you share them in a second, Greg, and sort of get the last word on this. You know, it's interesting to me. I wonder if these rulings assign new responsibilities that could encumber the social media platforms in new ways. So like now we're going to need a Brown Act for who can be on Facebook right now, because it's akin to the public meeting. Like, I don't know. We really got to think that through. Is that realistic? And is that really the world that we want to be in? Greg, you had some interesting insights about the journalism implications here.
Yeah, I think when this case gets to the Supreme Court, you know, you're going to see a lot of other organizations weighing in on, you know, either side, but amicus briefs and so forth. And I suspect one of those will be media or newspapers, largely because of what Christina said. You know, so much of it seems to me, and it's accelerated the last few years of our contact, and I think the public's contact with agencies and individuals in government are now really being channeled by those entities through their social media pages. And, you know, it's more instantaneous or something like that. There's a lot of problems I have with it, but that's what they've chosen to do. And, I think if the court were here to kind of decide, kind of go with the Sixth Circuit and say, no, you know, you can block if the purpose, if the, you know, the page is not an extension of your job as a state actor, it's fine. Has bad implications, worrisome implications, I think, for journalists, you know, because it will then empower the individual public official or elected official of the agency, the ability to kind of pick and choose who gets to ask them questions, or even who's exposed to what they're posting. You know, some blocking kind of eliminates you entirely from seeing what's on the page. And that can have a longer term, you know, chilling effect on journalism and journalists. Because if you are the head of the Parks and Rec Department or something, and you have a page, and you don't like the reporter who's covering Parks and Rec or what they've written, and Parks and Rec are a very big, important part of the community you're in, and you block that reporter or otherwise restrict them from access to your social media page, which is the primary form of communication, that affects that reporter and that news company. To me, it also kind of sends a very chilling message to every other reporter, which is like, this could be you, you know, don't. Yeah. So everybody's got to play ball. So it kind of could potentially vest elected officials, public agencies with even more power to pick the questioners. Or to, yeah. or to pick their coverage, to influence their coverage, rather than a more open and kind of broader approach, which I think is certainly what the Gardeners want, and is one of the things that the court is going to have to describe here. Figure out.
Yeah, great point. And by the way, probably a topic of yet another podcast, because isn't that what's happening every day in the White House briefing room? Picking who gets to sit there, calling on who gets to ask the question. And I think you and I in San Diego are accustomed to the status of course, they have to take our questions. But there are all sorts of people, journalists or self-defined journalists, which is what a journalist is, I think, who don't get answers to their questions, because that is what's happening every day. You know, this sort of selecting the messenger. But I think that maybe makes it an even more... a more powerful question right now, right?
It does. And it's interesting because the last point is that's exactly who's involved here. The moving force in this case is not a news organization. It's not a reporter. It's two parents in the district, you know.
Very good point. Yeah. Super interesting. Right. Right. Okay. Let's call it an afternoon right there. Luis, back to you.
Thank you very much, Jeff, Laura, Greg, Christina, and Matt. To read the UT editorial and the latest on this case, log on to sandiegouniontribune.com. That does it for this edition of The Backstory. For everyone at the San Diego Union Tribune, thank you very much for listening and for supporting local journalism. Have a great day, everybody.